Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/BehindTheRacketPod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now,
boy, do you stay up and watch the whole fucking five sets?
You know I did.
Okay. We're recording, so we'll just start there. I didn't stay up either. Last night was the first night. Welcome to the Behind the Racket podcast, the post-Australian Open catch-up with Wesley Chapel quarterfinalist Noah Rubin.
You know, I got three from...
Points.
Shit. shit. That was pretty quick on you. Between Wesley Chapel and being here in Cleveland for the Challenger, like three or four people are like podcasts. Like you gotta post another
Dude,
one. And they're like, wait.
I got it a lot.
Yeah,
I got
like
it a lot.
Like it actually, as much as it's like a humble brag, like it's pretty nice to hear though. Like people kind of listen, like every once in a while.
I've said this before and I'll say it again. I do know. We have a lot of people within the industry, if you will, that do listen.
Right.
And I'm greatly appreciative of that. It makes me feel like sometimes we hit the mark. Other times we just fucking don't, obviously.
Where are you in your cycle right now? Your jet lag cycle.
Last night was the first night I slept through the night.
Wow.
I got on Tuesday. We're recording Sunday. Let's see. So Saturday night, first night I slept through the night. The night before I was only awake for about an hour in the middle of the night. I feel like I finally have turned the corner or turned the page, either one, whichever cliche you want to use.
Way back from Australia has got to be like the worst.
It's
the
tough,
worst feeling.
Man.
Yeah. It's brutal. Cause you don't even know where you are, what day it is. Like
there were multiple times where I felt physically sick. Like I was going to throw up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let me just do a quick my experience Australian Open.
Please.
We'll want to catch up on your, you know, glow up here over the last couple of weeks. Australian Open remains. Don't get me wrong. I love going to New York. I haven't experienced from a work setting the Wimbledon French, but man, what they do for the fan experience down there is something else, man. Like it is a special tournament. I'm very lucky. The people who I work with treat me incredibly well. So that's one component, right? But you just get the sense that the people who get to go, who are lucky enough to travel down to Melbourne to watch not only the local residents, but if you travel down there, you get the value for the money you have to spend to get there. And that's really important. I loved... it got a little criticism, but the exhibitions the week before during Qualies week, the ability for that to be like $20 tickets, it's huge for a family, right? Like that's a big deal.
So I get the chance to see any kind of level of tennis like that. Yeah.
Right. To get to see Novak that for that kind of price is amazing. Having multiple stadiums as, you know, grounds pass tickets. Great. The entertainment was actually very good on the weekend, like having concerts right outside. And then I think it was Rudimental played right before the men's final last night, which it's not the biggest act in the world, but that's still a really solid act, right? Like, it's not like getting Belle Biv DeVoe, you know, 65-year-old and trot them out here. And let's play Poison from 1990.
Well, answer this for me real quick, though. It's been a few years for me. Do they still have, like, this chip on their shoulder? Like, that's what I always felt with Ozzy, was like that they felt like they had something to prove, and they always just I don't think they do, but I think that's why they always manage to go over the top in a way and really make everybody feel welcomed, and they're like, thank you for coming to this remote island.
I don't think of it as a chip on the shoulder anymore. I think that it's who they are. Level of expectation, and say hello to the first cat appearance. This would be Pig. We've got
they missed you. It's been a long month without you.
Yeah, 28 days is a lot. Marnie had a great time.
Yep.
She said to me right before she left to go back home that she had the best time and that she wanted to go home. And like, as a parent, that kind of sums up like the best, you gave your child the best experience you could. Like, they did everything they wanted to do.
And she's been waiting for this, you know, it didn't work out, you know, quite the first time. So,
since she was three. So that was a big deal. Work perspective, it was fun. There's
grinded.
Absolutely. Doing multiple TV matches plus radio is tough. It's not easy, but it was a lot of fun working with, I mean, getting to do a couple matches with Roger Rashid. I mean, that coaching mind is phenomenal. I'm going to miss people here, obviously, but that just the coworkers I had and getting to sit in that green room with some of that talent. I mean, you know, Laura Robson is amazing. Nick Lester, I think I could go on about him for days about the quality of his work. Robbie Koenig's there, just like Colin Fleming, the whole who's who of like top commentators. I get to work with Chanda Rubin again, who is just so good at what she does. It's very cool to get trusted to do some of those big matches. The radio opportunity where you're on, you know, in the bunker at Rod Laver Arena. Screw it, man. Like, that's flipping cool.
Yeah.
Like, I hope I never lose the joy, like walking down into a bunker and then like you are looking up at like flipping Novak's right there, just like about to like toweling off and about to serve, is just, that's pretty cool, man. That's,
I mean,
pretty
5 years ago,
cool. So,
you know, you've solidified your spot, especially at Ozzy, and I think, I mean, you're jaded in certain ways, you obviously still respect it, but like, it's been like, you've really solidified your spot there. You know, you have like a home in Ozzy now. You've been there, you've done your time.
Five years ago,
you wouldn't have said that, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, you know, people have to take a chance on you as a younger commentator who's not a former player. And I needed somebody to vouch for me, right? And that person vouched for me. And I had the opportunity actually in Australia. And I said, I appreciate you getting me in the door. And I feel like at this stage, I've earned my right to stay.
Yeah.
And that's...
That's all you can ask for. I mean, that's like the perfect transition.
And hopefully it continues. You know, you never, this industry, man, like, jobs are gone like that. So if it's one of those situations where I feel like now, even if I never get an opportunity to work another Australian Open, I did everything I could there. I did it. I did some big matches and I think I did them well. There were some other matches maybe I wasn't as great, but like, I knew, like, it's one of those situations where, and then I need to talk about one thing that's pretty serious.
Okay.
But like, just feeling good about being in the role and feeling comfortable. And that transitions me to, we've not talked about it on the pod too much, like once or twice, but stopping drinking last year on a regular basis. The clarity, I know I said this to you in New York last year, but the clarity I have now allows me to be at peace when I'm commentating. My anxiety is not where it used to be because I'm not having a drink or two every single night. And it is amazing to physically acknowledge that my body is different in when I'm commentating all around, like physically.
You're like at your playing weight in a way, you know, you're at your peak performance in some ways.
A little above playing weight still, sure, but I'm getting closer.
But
I'm
this down. Is the best, you know, you've looked, sounded as a whole. I mean, we saw that probably a few months ago. You know, you kind of had that real breakthrough where you're like, I feel pretty good right now, you know, yes. And you haven't said that in a long time. And now just like the way you're speaking and going through this, and even in like some not so great situations, it doesn't have to be like a bad day necessarily. You're like, just don't feel that need anymore, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I still will have a drink with friends. I want to make sure I say thank you to our podcast friend. Well, I don't know. You guys have your thing. Chris Eubanks. I think you still own 10 racks, but that's a different story. I'm truly indebted to him for his friendship and some of the things he did to take a risk on me over the last couple of years to just put himself out there. That really helped me and has given me a lot of clarity. He took me to Nobu.
First time ever,
which was,
oh goodness, okay,
like honest okay. to God, I think, well, the
you,
best,
you finish off air, okay,
the best the best piece of food I've ever had in my life was the black miso cod at Nobu. Was I like was close to crying that close, and that was a special night for me. Yeah, and getting to see Chris in the ESPN booth with Chris Fowler and like in the bunker.
Yes.
And like, oh my God, look, it's the giraffe. I see him.
Does he
that
fit?
Was barely. It's a tight squeeze.
It's
even
a tight
for
squeeze.
Me, so.
I know, I was going to say.
So I'm just very appreciative of him as a friend. I'm appreciative of you as well, because you are always checking in on me and you're doing so in the midst of qualifying for the first challenger back in Portugal, quarterfinal last week in Wesley Chapel, Florida. And I said it to you last week via text. I hope you are proud of yourself, because I think you are putting yourself out there in a really difficult spot right now. And that's very hard to do.
Well, first, yeah, thank you. I do appreciate it. Yeah, it's been, you know, I'm excited to be back. And yeah, it's, you know, like I snuck into main draw here at Cleveland, and it's like,
yeah,
oh, I'm in a main draw, like automatically. Like,
look at my free housing at the Clarion Inn.
Like, you know, these are things that I probably, you know, 3 years ago would have been like, what the fuck am I doing here? You know, like, right. What?
No,
in
you
the
would
world?
Have been.
And now, yeah, like, here I am, like, watching one of the matches to see if, like, the special exempt is going to be used or utilized. And then, like, if I'm going to be, because I was last one in, it was like, yeah, last second. It was based on the Bicknell Ilgon. I don't want to mispronounce.
I don't know who Blaze played. Yeah.
Yes. So if this Ilgon, I believe Ilgon, if he won the match, he would have taken the special exam. Blaze pulled, yeah, out of Cleveland, so he couldn't take the special. So he would have. So Ilgani would have taken my spot, and he lost the match. I got in. I was like, you know, here I am in a million disease. Yeah, I was like, fucking hell. Like, you know, it's a different world now. It's a completely different world for me. And yeah, I mean, we could start Portugal. I wasn't even supposed to play, really. I got into qualifying last minute, and here I am playing, like, you know, a friend and guy I've known forever.
Lucas Gerch is not a joke.
No, I play, you know, and you know, here I am. I'm like, I get up, you know, it's way less about everything else. I just get up to the line. There, we're indoors in Portugal. I played an outdoor clay court tournament there. We're indoors in Portugal. You know, we have line judges and chair umpire. I don't think any ball people. And nobody's watching. I think Fanslow came like halfway through the match, but I have zero people. So I'm
And he's not for you.
He's definitely He was not for me. I mean, he's good.
Great guy.
Yeah, we're one of our.
He and Lucas are very close.
Yes. And I mean, probably two of the nicest guys on tour, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Like the best. And but I get up to the line. I'm like, nobody's watching me, but I'm like shaking. Like I could feel my hand like as a racket comes up being like, oh, I don't even remember what this feels like.
Yeah.
Like that was out of body. I was like looking at myself. I'm like, what happens next? Like, do I go, the racket comes down and then my other arm goes up and the, like, what the fuck is happening? And I managed to play some okay tennis. But like kind of throughout these few tournaments, like just being back out there and, you know, feeling a part of it, because still, I mean, it's early. I mean, I played a decent amount of matches for a January for me, to be honest.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's still like getting the routines down and what do I do here? And like even last week, like saw myself like losing focus or what's happening now or what should I do? So it's all kind of coming back. It was, I mean, it was almost like 16, 17 months out from competition, which it's, I mean, getting that back, and I'm super competitive. So it's like trying to almost rile that down a little bit as I kind of relearn this sport, you know, just like relearn how to play tennis. So yeah, it's been fucking interesting though.
have you started taking Adderall yet, or?
No, it's not on my list of approved items. I don't have a TUE for this yet, but
I'm interested now. Like we joked about it last year. We talked about it multiple times. Do you get it now?
Do I get it now? I mean, it's crazy, you know, and I don't know how it all works. And I also believe that Adderall is the end all be all for a lot of these players.
I understand. I mean, I'm half joking, tough. Half serious, right?
No, but it does go into like the whole idea of like, are you playing a step behind? I mean, I think that's the question for like a lot of players that are or not doing it, or, you know, or doing something else. Like, you know, even now I'm looking at like, okay, the gels I'm using again, like, is this the right one? You know, is there another one? And like, from a gel to another gel, it's very minimal. So I can only imagine what it's like to possibly have Adderall on your side, you know, necessarily, you know? So yeah, I'm not in that place to really experiment that. But yeah, I mean, you know, I could see like 6 months from now when I'm like solidified my place back in tour and like feeling good and had some momentum, whatever, being like, you know, what's happening, you know, happening here. So, but weird to see some of these guys, and then you're just weird to see players in general. Some of these players, who do we have hitting practicing next to me yesterday? And I like sneak on court after was Sangrin Kudla, which was your first match at Aussie. Was Kudla? No,
Kudla. Yeah, technically second, but first second. Day. Yeah,
okay. Kudla Schwartzman.
My first match as an analyst.
Is that true?
Stepping into the two chair. It was fun with Hannah Kuhar was her name, a brand new lead commentary person. And she was excited and it had a good time with it. And I'm just like, I'll just talk about backhand down the line from Dennis Kudla.
I was gonna say, you've seen that only about 600,000 times. I mean, Kudla Schwartzman.
Talk about Buc-ee's a little bit and go from there.
But yeah, I mean, you know, seeing the players, you know, at the future last week and kind of going through it, and like, you know, for me, it's like this realization of like how I tried to bring it back to myself, which I don't always do, but I was like, I changed a lot in this year and a half you know, of like, you know, what I worked on in my life and how I feel about tennis as a whole. And, you know, a lot of players didn't take that opportunity necessarily. And like they're here, and I kind of see that, you know, they're kind of going through the same things. I feel like this incredible empathy for some of these players when I see them walk off a match with a tough loss, and you see like, oh wait, I know that look. Like, I've been in that spot before. I don't want to like go up to them and be like, you should quit tennis for a while.
Yeah,
but like,
no,
you know, it's every level. I'm sure you've seen it at, you know, Aussie, even, you know, because I felt that way. It's, you know, I would kill for a slam qualies right now, but I felt that way at slam qualies before. And then, you know, looking at this challenger right now and seeing some of these guys that look like burnt out already, you know, and I'm like, it's January still, you know, like, let's,
well, Yeah. No, they. I mean, we
no off season. Talked same to, yeah, conversation. I mean,
it's the same conversation that we've had for years. Like, stop the season at the end of October. Like, you could definitely argue earlier. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But this is for mental health purposes. The smart thing to do is stop it October 31st and just say, listen, sorry, you know, we'll move everything up. There are going to be some 250s that get burnt out. That sucks. There are going to be some challengers that get burnt out. That sucks.
The answer of you get to pick and choose your schedule is just, it's not the answer. It doesn't allow players to make the best informed decision for their career. It's
correct.
You just feel like
you have to.
You're losing out. It's a must. It's a must. So
it's absolutely a must.
Well, honestly, bringing this to the guy I'm traveling with for the past 2 weeks now, Maloney, like, I am looking...
Patrick, for most people, a lot of people might not know. He's still kind of new to it.
Yes.
Patrick Maloney, University of Michigan graduate, go blue or something. I don't know.
Yeah, Mays and
they
something.
Won a national title in football this year. Patrick Maloney also owes me $100. Go on.
You know, 6'4", good player, come out of college, yes, playing well, excited. New York guy, trained with him a bit. And like, you know, he's played some professional events. I think it's like under 10 in his life or something like that. And seeing it through his eyes, like it keeps that like novelty for me. And then watching him kind of describe how he sees how players are looking and how that looks and how that feels, you know, like Maloney, he qualified for the future last week and lost first round with match points, had match points to win 6-4 in the breaker in the third, and like that emotion and going through that. And he had like that first feeling I saw in his face of like, oh, like this journey like kind of sucks if you don't go through it quickly. And I was like, yeah, he's like, I didn't get a point. You know, I didn't get points. I got very little money. And I was like, yeah, this is brutal at times. And then him kind of being at this challenger and seeing some of these top players looking burnt out at times and looking tired. And then he's like, wait, is that Duckworth? Like Duckworth actually like came from Australia, is like indoors here. And, you know, just kind of going through all of that and seeing it through his eyes. I almost remember like my first time when I was with a guy named Corey Parr, who got to like 700, played at Wake Forest. Was working with my coach, so he like brought me out to my first future, and I was just asking all these questions, like, he has his kids here, but like I saw in the draw that he's making $200. I'm not great at math, but you know, I'm just going through that. So as much as it's, you know, I'm still excited to be back in Taurus, is very new for me, and I'm pumped. It's like seeing it through Pat's eyes, and he has these goals now, and he's just out of school, and he's, you know, a bit fresher than me anyway, and you know, it motivates me. It's fun. You know, it kind of has this like new, you know, childlike feeling to it of like, oh, anything can happen now. He has that, you know, oh, and now he's realizing because he's going through the points, he's like, oh, wait, it really does take like one event to break out. And I was like, yeah, like you could put like three matches in, you know, for a Pat too, who's like at 1,000. He qualifies, wins around here, like, things are looking a little different, you know. You're at like another, you know, it's just breaking away at those blocks. But yeah, to like come onto the court and like look at Sangren and Kudla hitting forehands cross, it's like, yeah, shit. Some things haven't changed that much.
Yeah. Well, I you know, I meant
Jesus.
Stop it. This kitten is just like
Puma just, out there.
Just loves to play, and the other former feral cat, that's Pig right there, absolutely hates it. But yeah, perspective is really important. Like, we had a few new commentators who did Qualies Week. It's a government program to get specifically young women involved in broadcasting sport. And some of them just didn't have the depth of tennis experience that you know, you just kind of are used to working with. And, you know, there's two ways of looking at that. Like, you can certainly go, oh, geez, they shouldn't be here, right? But I went the other route, and I was just like, we're getting to see tennis through, you know, new eyes, and see that they love it for maybe a different reason than I love it. And they see something that happens on court a completely different way than I might have seen it, because I've been doing this for 10 years, and I'm just kind of, as you said, maybe a little bit jaded at times. And there'll be times, you know, inevitably at every tournament, and I think every commentator has this moment where you just sit there and say, oh man, I really hope this person comes through in straights. I'm tired. But then maybe that doesn't allow you to really engage with the drama that's happening. And so, you know, seeing new people, Val Febo, who's a journalist down there, and he got to do commentary for the first time, and like seeing his absolute passion for it, and how dedicated he was, and like his, you know, he comes in, I hope he won't mind me saying this, but he came in one day, we did a match together again, where I was the analyst and he was the lead, the play-by-play guy. And he sits down with all like two notebook pages, like with tiny handwriting and like every single note possible that you could possibly scrounge from the internet. I can't remember which match it was, but I was just, he's just like, what do you think? And I was just like, I am so impressed. And as soon as you get comfortable to take that down like 80% so that you're focused on, you know, the intake of knowledge is great.
Yeah.
The ability to send it out into the world properly is what makes the great ones great. Just, you know, that translation. And I was so impressed because he got better every single time, but his joy was there the whole time. But yeah, it's really nice to be around younger, you know, younger is relative here, sure. But people who have different eyes, different vantage points on the thing that we really love was really cool. And I'm glad both of us got that experience over the last couple of weeks. And I'm happy to see you out there. And I'm really hoping that you at least, you know, sneak into Sarasota or Tallahassee, which will be my first challengers in April. So if you want to, you know, you've got what I'm not
to go back to the fence and see your face. It's going to be one.
You're at what? Like I'm not. You have like 4 points right now that you've earned.
Really?
You don't know. No, yeah.
Like, I don't even.
I know it's a long. Yeah. It's a long process.
Journey. Yeah. I mean, again, we say it could take that one event, so that's kind of what I'm just waiting for. And honestly, I mean, for people that don't know, I wasn't really even supposed to play this time. I'm getting married in March.
I still have to book all my stuff.
So. Wonderful, Jamie.
And apparently now I have to get a tux.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, it sucks.
Can I rent one?
You can.
Okay.
But like Men's Warehouse, you get like your measurements and then you can like pick it up in New York. It's like a whole thing. It's pretty
easy. Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
But yeah, so I asked her, I was like, hey, like, should I just, I was planning on waiting until like April because I don't have a ranking. It doesn't really matter if I start in January, April, there's no off season, you know, here's a benefit to it. And she's like, no, like might as well like just play and get out there. So like, this is all gravy and I'm just kind of finding, you know, how to play again. But, I have no idea how many points. I don't look at it. I mean, yeah, it's nice to see that the ranking is moving up and hopefully getting closer to my PR, which I get 12 tournaments to sign in.
Oh, you get 12. Okay.
530 in the world, which this Cleveland Challenger will be my fourth one now. So I'll have another 8 after this to use to hopefully get to that 530 ranking, basically.
I'll put in a plug. It would be nice if maybe you got one or two qualifying wild cards just to
ease the pain. So far, it hasn't been there, but it's okay. And I'm fine right now. But yeah, I would nice like. To love to sneak to like an ATP 250 for one qualifying would be amazing. So, you know, if I could bring my Jewish Florida crew out to Delray would be great. And I've always had fun and did well there. But yeah, I mean, just like, it just feels good to be out, you know, and play. So I'm not even focusing on it. I've been down this road more than a couple times before school, after school, kind of midway through again after an injury. I kind of get the point of this all. And I feel good. But yeah, to see your fucking face in that corner one day, sliding out to a forehand.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Are we going to talk about other tennis though for a second?
Yeah. Okay. Australian Open. Jannik Sinner, Aryna Sabalenka. absolutely felt like the two best players of the tournament won.
Yeah.
Not flukes of draws or anything. Like, Sabalenka was dominant. Sinner absolutely dominated the men's side. Up until the final had only been broken twice. And then a comeback from, and then coming back from two sets to love down to beat Medvedev, who is truly remains like, like first of my, Daniil's my guy. I love him to death.
I don't think he gets enough credit for, his tennis ability and what he can do. I mean, Rublev, obviously the nickname, the octopus, but some of these points that you're watching from Aussie, I will disagree a little bit. I mean, obviously the comeback from Sinner is unbelievable. Watch the highlights. But Medvedev wins that in three or four, and we're saying that Medvedev played some damn good tennis that tournament.
For sure. But I mean, listen, I called his first round match against Atman, the Frenchman, and he was gassed. Like, he was getting pushed at that stage. He was so, like, I mean, he spent like, it was, I think he, if he'd have won, it was the most time spent on court in a major by any Grand Slam winner. If he had won in four sets.
Right.
So like, he got pushed a lot. Obviously he had to come from two sets down the other day. So yeah, but I think Sinner, everybody has known for a while that he was going to be here. It took, I think back to those two, he had two challengers with us, Binghamton and Lexington.
One of the few people you called to be.
Yeah, top. I don't call it very often, but that it was very clear after watching him in those
with
2 weeks,
Binghamton
and
Kruger,
he won
by the
in
way.
Lexington the second week. I think quarterfinal loss to Kruger in Binghamton. Shout out Mitch. And then winning Lexington the next week. I said it then. It was just like, this guy is very clearly going to be a Grand Slam champion at some point. And it's not about my call. I'm not the only one who made that call. It's not like I went on a limb there, but like, it was so obvious. And the adjustments he's made over the last couple of years, Darren Cahill being part of the team, and just, I mean, Killer is probably, I mean, one of the top five coaches of all time at this point. I mean, bringing Halep, Agassi back. I mean, kudos to Killer. But yeah, Jannik Sinner's there. Sabalenka.
Wait.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, I think so. My initial question, and we can ask it a few different ways. The two questions would be: A, with this level of tennis, is he a multiple Grand Slam winner? Is he
Sinner?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. I mean, I think now we're at this point now that you've got what three guys here. Team obviously still there, and Andy's still there too, but you've got, Alcaraz, Medvedev, and Sinner. Now you've got three guys who can push Novak consistently and know that they have the what it takes to win a slam.
Yeah.
I think we're good now.
I'm guessing the consistency and seeing what that looks like, at this level. I mean, some of the ball striking was incredible.
Of course.
But yeah, I mean, I don't think we have to guess on that. I'm curious, like, a US Open run for him would be massive. And then the question is, not good or bad for tennis, but where does, like, a Sinner, two in the world, one in the world, lie for tennis?
If you give me Sinner Alcaraz.
Yeah.
And Carlos has been honest about the fact that he's got some, now it's one of those things, everybody's kind of adjusted to him a little bit. Now he's got a, much like Sinner did, like Sinner rose quickly, plateaued, right? And so everybody adjusted to him, and he's had to make the adjustments to get to that next level. And I think, Alcaraz did it at a little bit higher level, obviously having won, US Open Wimbledon. So he got there quick, but then there's that plateau, and now he's got to make another adjustment. Talked about his serve in particular. You give me Sinner Alcaraz for the next 10 years, I'm going to be very happy with Medvedev as a great counterpoint to those two ball strikers.
It's cool. Funny. I think Sinner, which you don't always see. I mean, he's a quiet, kind of shy personality, but for whatever reason, like, people have taken a liking to him, and like he almost has a personality because of fans. Like he,
the Kuroda boys and everything.
So like, it's almost like good enough because of what fans have like created for him in a way. And obviously, the tennis ability is so exciting. And I think, like you said, Alcaraz Sinner is amazing. But he doesn't have the Medvedev.
No, but it's going to be like Iga. I mean, it's going to be like Iga, right? I mean, Iga's kind of the same way. Is the tennis is incredible. The personality is more refined, right? Like it's an intelligent one. Obviously, everybody makes a big deal out of how much she reads. I saw her out as a tourist in Melbourne, just like walking around and taking in the sights. And I think Sinner's the same way, right? Like these,
but I do think fans have done a better job with Sinner almost than any other. I'll use your word, refined personality. Like they like created this for him, where he's like now this like lovable boy. You know, it's like
Let me just say, there's also a little bit of money that went into the Kuroda boys from outside, that's helping them travel a little bit.
I mean, by all means. I mean,
even as it should be.
Even if they created it, then good on their PR team. Like, God, we need more on that. Like, even if that is the case, that's amazing. So, regardless, people, somebody, whatever being, realized that Sinner may not be the person that loves being in front of the camera. So, how can we do it? So, I think that's great because, you know, God, how many videos I saw the Kuroda boys, like, just like on, like, that's. We need a little bit of that Medvedev.
100%.
We just need to put a camera in front of that guy. It says anything that comes to it. I mean, him and Courier should. I just like that combination.
It was great, dude. So I just need to say, I've told this story before about me talking to Medvedev in Miami 2 years ago, where we were doing for Tennis TV like a deep dive, and we did that short version that he and Courier did.
Mm.
Daniil and I had like a 7 or 8 minute conversation about what he sees when he returns from back there and how he structures a point as a returner. It was, honest to God, the best. It was like a masterclass for 7 minutes.
Yeah.
So when I saw him do that with Courier, I'm like, good on Jim for taking the time to do it on court in front of people, because that's important. Those things are like for your tennis nerds. So, you know, there are going to be some people who are not like the tennis nerds who are just like, I don't know what he's talking about, but you know, like, but the tennis nerds like to understand that, and the dynamic between the two of them, it's flipping great.
I've got like weird questions from people, and like they play tennis, they know like enough,
yeah,
and they see him winning, and still will be like, why does he do that? Why does he stand so far back?
Yes,
and I'm like, that was great,
amazing,
and again, like Medvedev in front of the camera is going to be something. It's going to be something. And then Alcaraz obviously has he's probably the closest that falls into that like Fed Nadal Djokovic category of aura and personality. So like, I think he has kind
smile.
Of, and the smile, he has like that whole thing going, and that doesn't mean anymore. And I think again, Sinner has his thing, but, if they can kind of keep it in that bowl, which I don't know if it does, we talk about consistency in the men's side. We don't know, like next year, I mean, Djokovic still looks like he has another 5 years left in his tennis, so I can't even say anything on that front.
He's gonna be there.
He's gonna be around until Bopana, you know, age, which I love seeing him
with. I love it.
Aussie. But yeah, I think it's a pretty good place to be. And then I mean, we can go to the women's side, which I mean, that is, we haven't seen a dominating Grand Slam like that since I mean,
maybe even Sabalenka last year, but she had a little bit more little up and down last year.
Yeah.
But that was dominant.
The
dominant
Google,
tennis.
Like just going on Google and like kind of going through the scores, 2-2, 4-2, 3-1, like easiest dollar she's ever made in her career. But yeah, I mean, what are your personal thoughts on Sabalenka as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, it's. Listen, if we go into some depth about her ties to Lukashenko in Belarus, I mean, there's some questions there that I have not read up on enough to know. But I mean, there's some, it's uncomfortability, discomfort that goes along with that. So there's that. Outside of that, she is a great personality. You see that. I mean, some of the breakpoint episodes, I mean, you see her personality shine through. She seems to have fun. Even in the Djokovic and Friends stuff that was, you know, the leading in, like, she gets it. She plays the game well. She knows that personality really matters. And I think that's, you know, unfortunately for, you know, especially true for Eastern Europeans, that is hard to have that commercial breakthrough, if you will. That has always been the case. Martina Navratilova is obviously the biggest example of that. That's always been the case in terms of the US dollar. I think she plays that game very, very well, lets her personality shine through. And there are some real positives that go along with that. And frankly, you know, I think it's great to see her having a little bit of a rivalry starting to develop with Coco. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important. Coco is, I think in terms of that Q factor, she's the one on the women's side right sure. now. Iga's, I think, you know, it's going to be tough for her. I mean, she provides such a great counter to the incredible, powerful ball striking that we're seeing, you know, so much of, especially from Sabalenka. But I think she proves is such a good foil.
Iga has that like Fed aura, yes, in a way, exactly. You know, with how she plays, and then obviously the off court, you know, charming but quiet, you know, feel where yeah. I think Sabalenka ticks her own boxes as well, and Coco obviously. We know, I mean, there's not enough boxes there to be had.
Also, I want to make sure I say it's like there are plenty more, and we don't hit everybody here, but like Svitolina was back to playing like her peak and had the back issue not flared up. Like that was going to be, you know, think about the idea of Svitolina, Sabalenka, and obviously there's some political drama that goes along with the fact that Sabalenka, and again, this is the one thing I really didn't like about Sabalenka over the last year when she didn't like, she'd feigned like, why wouldn't Svitolina shake my hand?
Right.
You know, like, you know why.
You know what's happening.
That was the one thing that bothered me about her, but like, that would have been amazing for tennis as well to provide that countership. And I think we're at a point as well, I want to make sure I mention this, and this is a delicate thing to mention. It coming back from childbirth is an amazing feat. Incredible. We're almost at a point though where we don't need to mention it because there are so many, thankfully, and this is to a positive effect.
It's fucking insane.
It's absolutely nuts, but like because of how many people are doing it, it's just like now it's just like almost common.
Right.
And I think that's a great thing, you know what I mean? So
ankles and then you're like a human.
I say that like yeah I think it's a great thing to that we're bringing back this idea of moms on tour is just commonplace
and you only did it once.
Shut up Like it does change your perspective. I can't speak to the physical aspect, but it absolutely changes your perspective about what's important.
I mean
God, we didn't even mention Naomi. I mean, having her back in the fold is amazing. I mean, like she brings another dynamic too, and is starting to speak out more and more about her. You know, she's been so vocal about her mental health aspect. Ben's book, I want to make sure, like he's been on every podcast that's known to man and every television station. I had meant to bring Ben's book about Ben Rothenberg, his Naomi Osaka book with me to Australia and then forgot. So that is my next couple of weeks is going to be reading that. But
her she's in a good place, though. Fold,
she's
yeah,
in a
I
great
mean,
place.
I think she's like in a similar, I mean, we're definitely at different levels. Mine's at futures, hers are at slams. But it's like, I think she feels this, like the pressure's off now. Like she's so far, you know, removed.
It feels
from,
that way.
It feels that way. I mean, obviously, and I could tell it's not always going to be that. You're going to have pressures and it's going to feel like shit at times, but for her, I think that real boulder, you know, on her back of like, I have to be this person. I don't know if that's there anymore for her, which is great. I think if she could find her way back into that mix of slam champions fighting
huge.
Coco, you know, for matches again, I think that's it's great for a lot of reasons. You got some good groups. You really do. And then you know,
really
can talk on the American guy side of what that could look like in the next year. I mean, there's only a billion things that can happen with that. You know, I don't even want to go through all the names and,
yeah.
and, you know, people will say, oh, those are randos. And I'm like, yeah, that rando could reach the second week of a slam and we wouldn't question it. You and I wouldn't question it per se.
Yeah. Well, I want to put it, you want to each take one?
What are we taking necessarily? Just like
Ethan Quinn is going to be close to top 50 by the year end.
Okay. Okay. I finally got to speak to him for the first time. I like didn't know him. He was good in Portugal. Dude. Yeah, good dude. Like normal
professional.
Yeah.
That is professional.
Loves his khakis. Loves his khakis.
Yeah, this make one bold prediction.
Okay, here's an interesting one. I haven't got to watch the play. Heard good things. I am playing him first round.
Oh, Lerner Tien.
Like I'm interested. He's a good. I've heard really good things. I heard good guy. There's a lot of like college guys coming out that like, and Pat Maloney has been like kind of like upping me. Like, yeah, this guy's like pretty good. I got to watch Bailey play. He's not an American, but he was he's in college. Like so seeing
Texas,
like
right?
Texas. Yeah. Yeah, he was number one in the world ITF. So kind of seeing those. They're not quite as young as like what we were necessarily when we were like 18, 19. Quinn is 19 or 20.
I think he's, oh God, I don't know.
That's a tough one. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be as bold as you, but I see a Paul US Open run this year.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm not going to take a outside. God, who's an outsider, like a real outsider? No, I'm going to go back in 5 minutes. We're going to make it the title of this podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do.
All right.
But Paul, let's, US Open run.
I'm good with that. Yeah. I think Ben Shelton on grass this year is actually going to be that's going to be a real thing.
That's real. Yeah.
Like, as opposed to like first year on tour. Never played on clay, never played on grass.
Right, yeah.
Second year, if his mindset is where it needs to be, and it's been a hard year in that regard, especially the fact that we're still fucking talking about the fucking hanging up the fucking phone. Can we fucking let that go? Jesus Christ.
Well, I was a little bit shocked that Djokovic went a little bit deeper into it than I thought he would.
Same.
I thought he was going to be like, why are we still talking about this? But maybe there is more to the story than we know. I have no clue because
no clue. But like,
yeah, I mean, I think it's great for the sport, and you know,
same. Did you see the Japanese kid who won juniors at AO this past weekend, and he pulled out the sword?
Oh, that's fantastic!
Fuck me, I was like,
I mean, honestly, here I am where I feel like I'm fairly mature. Like, I think about like if I had a moment. What would I do because of like guys like this doing it?
Yes.
You know, and we had it all the time, and yeah, I get like the phone hanging up. Like there's a little bit more of it. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, this is unbelievable. It's on every comment on any ATP tour. Like, thank God.
But it's good to have a foil though. It's good for Novak to be kind of like that. The old just like, get off my lawn, kids.
But honestly, maybe that was 1% of it for me was like, maybe he just like needs extra motivation.
Yeah, you know, sure,
maybe this is like, he is like rationalized it to like, this pisses me off, even though it really doesn't. And like, I'm going to use it to kick these guys' asses. Like maybe that was it because, yeah, I mean, obviously I didn't expect Sinner to take him out and quite as easily as he did, but like, it's still Djokovic's tournaments to lose right now.
100%. You
know, that's what it is. And like at times he's like going through and looks bored still at 36, which is crazy to see. And yeah, so maybe this was like his thing of being like, yeah, these kids piss me off. And like, but
all right,
yeah,
let's, we won't end with this, but it'll be our last, I think, big topic. Sasha Zverev. Did you vote for him for player council?
So I started watching the new season of Breakpoint.
Yeah.
And they make him out to be like this true like hero in a lot of ways. And speaking to a few people in the past weeks, like it's really not okay for tennis. Like really not okay. Like if he would have won Aussie, which was very possible in a lot of ways, I think it would have been awful. I think it would have been one of the worst things tennis has had in a long time. You know, maybe they talk about tennis more, so you say any publicity kind of thing, but this is really not okay with, you know, and then you have these commentators speaking about how the trials during the French, which he probably won't be there for. And then you're like, what the fuck is this all about? And how is nothing being done? Like ATP is like, oh, we don't care enough anymore, right?
Well, yeah, the a couple of things here. Number one, him getting voted to the player council made all of the questions to the players completely fine. Also, when I did them thumbs up, look, like all of a sudden there was just like a little, did you see the little thumb bubble?
Yeah, I did.
Anyways, that was there. Look, there it is again. Hey,
that's creepy.
That's creepy. So people who are listening won't be able to see that. But if you're watching us on YouTube, so those questions became completely okay to be asked of every single player. There's somebody who's accused of domestic abuse on multiple fronts. How do you feel about that? That question is totally on board. Like, it's totally fine. It was the fact that there wasn't somebody from the ATP taking those questions, fielding those questions after the announcement of the trial date and that the financial component. At some point, that's where the leadership has to step in. We can, again, those questions are on board for the players, right, to take now that he's player counsel. But man, it would have been nice to have somebody from higher up, or even the president of the player council, whatever, to step forward and take some of those questions so that, you know, like flipping Taylor Fritz isn't having to be asked that question. Like,
regardless, it's just not okay right now. And honestly, I think we're going to have like a wind up again now that Zverev is playing some good ball, you know, is going to be in the conversation every tournament.
Yes.
Yeah. We're going to have like, come the U.S. Open time, especially, I think it's going to be post-French. Wimby U.S. Open is going to be a lot of questions. And if anything, it just like takes away from the tennis. How many times have we spoken about this? Like a situation in tennis that takes away from what's actually going on in the sport, what's actually exciting. It's just like, and this is not good. You know,
The lack of respect for, I'm trying to like step away from my personal feelings on what happened, whether his guilt or not. I'm trying to do my best to be somewhat impartial on that regard here when I say this. But the lack of respect it shows to domestic abuse victims, that there's still to this moment not a domestic abuse policy or some sort of policy for, let's call it, serious crimes, you know, bodily crimes, whatever you want, however you want to phrase that. I get how complex it is when you're dealing with independent contractors versus contract employees like NFL, NBA. That's contract employees. That's a different beast. It's a little bit easier to institute policy when you have a player union that you're having those discussions with player unions representing all players versus the league. It's a completely different story when you're with independent contractors and you have off-court issues. That is a very difficult, you know, pathway to take. I fully understand that. But for there still to be no policy of saying when this happens, when there is a criminal court case, this triggers X, Y, component to like our own investigation. And for fans, you have to understand a criminal conviction is so difficult when it comes to domestic abuse, because you end up with he said, she said, 95% of the time. There's not going to be physical evidence. There's not going to be video evidence. Like I made this argument the other day with a friend who we were discussing this, you know, the Ray Rice situation in the NFL. He was going to get a slap on the wrist suspension, and then the video came out.
Right.
Like that doesn't happen very often. So you have to get into the weeds here, and you have to look at circumstances and look at that evidence just off the side of it here and just say everything points to him being very much involved. And you have to be able to look at that in that respect. That's why it's still really upsetting to me that the initial report on the initial allegation wasn't released. They released this press release saying, there was conflicting evidence. Of course there is. You have two people with different, and we don't know what would have triggered something for them. What was going to be enough? What, is there enough circumstantial evidence to trigger something?
Yeah, I mean, there's no good answers for this. There aren't any.
Has to be.
Right, No, I get that. But I also would have liked Zverev to take the reins a bit and be like, stop asking my fellow tennis players kind of thing.
Agreed.
I would have liked him to say, hey, this is mine. Like, you're not going to take any responsibility. At least take the responsibility that this is your situation and not others. Fritz doesn't have to be answering. And I get that.
He's on the player. He got voted to the player council.
No, I'm not saying other players shouldn't be answering necessarily. I just like him personally to be like, this is my, be a little bit more mature about this. This is a really shitty situation. He has his own story. I get that. Everything's pointing to the opposite, but he has his own story. But take this on and saying, this is my situation. Let me be the one to say no comment
To that point, and I know it's a legal criminal situation, but he also does have the right to his side of that story, right? Like 100%. I want to make sure I'm very clear about that. I by no means am convicting him of both crimes. He has the right to his side of that story. And in the criminal sense, he absolutely will get to have his say. But I think there is something to be said for him saying, listen, I will take on this responsibility. It's going to be mine. It's going to be my burden. And as opposed to trying to shame the people who are asking those questions, just accept that that's, even if it's so much as I will have no comment on this issue until post Australian Open, something along those lines. Yeah. And his team, that's where his team has to step forward and say,
this is how we're going to do round one. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot out there that I don't think a lot of people have read because it's not covered up, but it just hasn't gotten the light that it deserved in a lot of ways. Again, us talking about this is kind of a waste of time. But what I will say is there's a lot of situations.
Do not say that. I'm actually going to be serious here. That it is important to continue to talk about it because the fact if more and more if we're talking and. Kudos to Ben Rothenberg. He knows, I know, everybody knows there are a lot of people who don't like him, but kudos to him for continuing to push the issue and shine that light on it. And it has to. Podcasts like ours, regardless of whether we joke about it or not, we're a top 10 tennis podcast in the world. We have to fucking talk about it. It's important.
No, 100%. I meant more about the resolutions necessarily.
We
have no say in, but it's. It just comes and we had, in 1 year we had Bashilashvili say both wild and then Zverev. And it's just like
Kyrgios.
Kyrgios. We have a lot that just gets swept under the rug and then becomes an issue that takes away from Sinner. That comes an issue that takes away from Coco Gauff. It's just tennis can't afford this. And when you don't reply to the situations correctly or at all, as a top organization like ATP, WTA, then you're just making this tenfold snowball effect. And it just becomes, I'm really concerned with this post-trial. If he doesn't show up, he does this. We have Wimby, US Open. It's going to be the number one talk situation in any interview ahead of these tournaments.
I want to also make sure I say kudos to the AO social media team. The way they handled Zverev in particular, I think, was dead on. Didn't put him in any of the fluff pieces and didn't really post too much about him on socials until it warranted on court, making the second week.
Right.
You have to honor that, right? You have to honor the on court. I think that's part of the job. Even if people don't like it, I think that is really important to say, Zverev looked great. You have to honor that, in my opinion. if he is an upstanding member of the ATP, which he is right now, you have to honor that. But you don't have to put him in the fluff pieces. And you didn't have to put him as a hero in Breakpoint. Yes. There's no requirement of that. And if you choose that, you better mention the negative. You better mention that there is something negative about him, or else you are going to get the heat. And you knew there was at least one accusation. You knew about Acapulco and almost, you know, hitting a chair umpire with your racket. To not...
The broadcasting team was doing a pretty good job. I will
say, they were.
I will say now...
Finally, ESPN very, talking about it.
Right, there's very few places, broadcasting-wise, that aren't bringing it up. So, yeah, I mean, that's where we're at right now. It sucks to be in that situation with so much good tennis going on. And now, yeah, and now we're almost in February.
And now we're in Rome.
And
what happened, it happened, and now we're in Rome.
I mean, we spoke for an hour. This is, I don't want to speak to you for that long.
I know, but we haven't done a podcast in like
I know.
2 months. So therefore, you know, it's like 3 20 minute episodes.
It was the funniest thing where you're trying to plan. You're like, are you good for this time? I was like, for the third time, that is 4 a.m. for me.
I mean, we tried efforts.
For like a 5:30 once. California
Dude, I was also
bad. 19 hour delay.
Yeah. Oh. I was also doing my best to do podcasts in Australia and recorded all of one. And that's part of that's on me. Like there were some personal things that were happening while I was down there.
You were grinding hours.
Yeah, then started, it was like Ryan Williams owes me one. Let's see. Kubler.
Oh my God. He's going, what in, they got excited over Kubler? See, Kubler, if we can send you this clip, balloons came out of Cation's ass because you have been avoiding us for over a year now.
But like, so Kubler's warming up on MCA, like the day before the tournament starts. And I you know, sneak down and onto the court and he's just like, oh man, I shouldn't do an Australian accent. Just like, are we doing it right now? He's like warming up. I'm like, yes, everything's right there. Let's go. He knows, but like, yeah, Jill Krabus is going to hop on. She's good. Kupfer. Like we got all of these people who are, yeah, it's hard.
I know. It's January. It was my comeback. Aussie was brutal time wise.
And I had 10 days of vacation with my daughter down there.
So February is a good month though. February, March are a little bit quieter. You have the Sunrise Swing as well, which is not the worst time to get.
I'll be in Miami.
Yeah. So.
And your wedding is right there.
Yeah.
That's a great question. What tennis players are invited to your wedding so that I can record a podcast there?
I'm not even kidding. So,
yeah, no shit.
Yeah. Well, we don't want anybody coming to our wedding.
Dude, like, do you know how many people have asked me, like...
You texted me, you're like, am I still a part of this thing? I was like, yes, not only did I downgrade you from a groomsman, you're actually uninvited to our wedding now. I didn't know how to answer that text. Yeah, we are sending out invites. It's actually not that late, though, apparently. We just didn't also send out save the dates, though.
That was the killer. Yeah, right. That was the killer.
Right, because we don't want people, again, we really don't want people to come. So,
all right.
Yeah. But you're going to be there? Sick.
I don't know yet. I don't have anything booked. I have fucking nothing booked.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to grab a couple of podcasts while I'm at the national team indoors. Actually, not too far away from you in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I believe today, as we're recording this is
starting date of that. What do we got there?
February 17th-ish.
Yeah. Yeah. I might be around. We might be able to be together a little bit.
Fuck, that'll be terrifying. but yeah, so next week we're going to have the podcast with Rob Galloway. His story is fantastic. I mean, coming from, he was like a top junior when he was 12.
Yeah.
And then kind of just fell off and ended up at Wofford. And now, it took him some years to get through the Futures Challengers grind and now is like seated at ATP events on the double side. Great story that I recorded with him. Kudos to him. Like, I was just like, hey, listen, I have like an hour tomorrow. Do you want to get it done? He's just like, yep. He even lost the day before. And he was just like, yeah, it's my last day here. Let's do it. So I'm appreciative of Robbie G. So that'll happen. We have an Excel spreadsheet. We're going to be more productive. So you and I are going to actually go through and like set times and shit and try to act like adults for once.
God bless America.
We got an election coming up here in a couple.
No. I got to go.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's see what, do we get an emoji if I just induce this up?
Kubler. Right. No.
Right. I don't know. We'll know. We'll work on how to.
Great.
Wow. That one's crazy. That was great.
Okay. You have to go to YouTube to check that out. Mike Cation, go to my page. We'll have the podcast up as a video soon, I think.
Maybe.
I don't know how any of this works. Love you. Bye.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.